podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello and welcome to Post-Match Raw. Liverpool are out the FA Cup, got beat 2-1 by Brighton. And the poor soul joining me, who volunteered for this podcast. So I'm guessing Justin was on some sort of marijuana when he did this. It's Justin Wells. How are you doing, Justin?
No, unfortunately, it's just caffeine. I mean, how am I doing? The bright side is at least the fixture. At least I don't have to watch a replay. Like, watching a second Wolves game was unpleasant but required. And I'm glad I don't have to watch us play Brighton again, because they own us and we don't have to see him again this year. So, fare thee well, Tony Bloom's men of merry band of men from the South Coast.
And please take our Europa Conference League spot.
Absolutely.
Basically. All the Euro, anything that starts with Europa, take it off us. I do not want to see, like, Eastern European teams. Next season.
Or Thursday football.
Just like, even if it's a Premier League game on Thursday, just void it.
I just don't like Thursday football.
Just give it away. 3-0. I don't care.
Yeah.
I usually start with the starting 11s, but there wasn't really anything interesting about our team, apart from maybe Elliot keeping his place on the left wing, which we'll get into as the game goes along, because he certainly improved in that role. The only thing interesting from Brighton's team is that the Caicedo business obviously came into effect, and he's obviously not in the team for them. Didn't seem to... Well, it affected him in the first half, you'd say, but second half it didn't really. Anything from either team you want to mention, or should we just blow straight into the game?
I mean, I think it tells you what De Zerbi thinks about us if he's just going to sit there and play Pascal Gross and Alexis McAllister, both of whom are attack-minded, midfielders, in a double pivot. Like, he didn't think we have much... thought we had much threat going up the middle. And I actually think that he was wrong about that early in the game. I think we actually, Gakpo connected play well. So I think that was a gamble that for De Zerbi that, look, it paid off. They got through. But it was one that I think that he set up for that had a mixed impact on at least the first half of the game. But otherwise, from what both teams lined up to do, the other thing that is shocking from them is that they did go with two up front with Ferguson and Welbeck, because they typically do not play two up front. And I think that that was something also that changed the balance of the game a bit, that it, into a manner that might have suited us a little bit better early on. But, other than that, there's no big surprises. We were exactly unchanged. We were mostly unchanged with the exception of Trent coming in for Milner.
I think that's probably interesting. Obviously, Trent, we need Trent to be a star, because we can't have Milner. Well, one, he can't play more than two games in quick succession, or three in a short period of time, or whatever. And Trent's just a very key player for us. But we'll come on to Trent as we go along. You mentioned their team, or certainly their midfield, being maybe lacking defensively. And I think we did see that at the start. I think, obviously, 3 minutes I've got marked down here, we have a chance. It's the one where it's a bit scrambly in the box. I think it's... I can't remember who passes to Naby, but Naby passes to Mo. And then it's a bit chaotic in the box. There's another breakaway.
I think it was Naby. I can't remember who passed to Naby. I was thinking about the later chance.
Yeah. And then there's a Trent filthy pass. But we do start the game quite well. Obviously, Brighton have the odd moment, but we start quite well. And I think It seemed to stem from our midfield, and obviously I think a big criticism this year has been, obviously Moore's not performed to his best, but I think a big criticism is that we just don't get him involved in the game. And I think in that first half, but I'd say maybe the first 30 minutes, that's probably the most I've seen Moore involved in a game possibly all season.
I think so too. I think it was just because we had better central interplay and overloaded the center of the park on them, where we were able to at least try to slip him in behind a bit or get him into situations where, because we had such a central overload with Harvey was also coming very central. Gakpo was dropping deep, and you had, our three midfielders all just basically occupying the center of the park and creating an overload there. We were able to isolate Mo against either a center back moving or a fullback. So we were able to do the things with him that we want to do, where you put him into space and then let him either cut in and shoot or lay one across. Early on, that chance that you speak about early, Mo, has that ball's going in if Lewis Dunk doesn't clear it off the line, right? It's a very good defensive play. But, he started to at least show some threat. Now, I think the issue there is the moment he is a player playing without a ton of confidence, and a player who also, because of, both Harvey Elliott and Cody Gakpo's lack of pace, when he gets in behind, he has to hold the ball up, which is not his natural game. Like, Mo Salah is not he's got decent hold-up ability, but that's not a hold-up striker, right? He's not going to play with his ass into a center back and then lay it off. And that's unfortunately how he got used a bit early in the game, and I think that wasn't exactly effective.
Yeah, it's a bit strange. I think we're obviously still trying to work out the attack. We might as well redo our conversation we did before we started recording. Yeah. I think a lot of people expected, or maybe just wanted, Darwin to play, and we basically said it must be for the off-ball stuff, because we certainly worked better in terms of the press, but we do miss another pacey player. Obviously, we're missing Diaz and Jota, Jota's not lightning quick, but he's quite quick, and either of them can catch up with Mo, and obviously being in a similar space at the same time, or certainly in the up the pitch with him. Whereas Cody, obviously he's playing in a new role for him, and we'll obviously discuss him as the game goes on. But Elliot, obviously a right winger who we're trying to turn into a midfield, now we're trying to turn into a left winger /10. I think it definitely worked better with Elliot today, but it just doesn't look like a Liverpool attack, which has kind of been the story all season, I suppose. But yeah, what did you make of Darwin not starting? I mean, we obviously had this discussion already, but we'll do it for the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can maybe look, I don't agree with the logic, but I think the logic probably is that regardless of what you think about Harvey Elliott's efficacy off the ball, there's a lot more activity from him off ball than Darwin Nunez, right? Darwin is not a particularly defensively engaged forward. He's not Haaland, where there's no defensive engagement. But the part of the weakness you have with Darwin when he's playing up the middle is that he doesn't really shut off the passing lane from center back to central midfield. Gakpo does shut off that passing lane and does force you to play wide. And it just feels also, if you are going to use Harvey obviously Mo's been doing this for years, but if you're going to use the two of them in the front wide roles, it suits them a bit better than having to play down the middle, because they can use the sideline to help them defensively. Whereas if you're playing up the middle, like, you're a lot more exposed and you need to be a lot more active. Gakpo is a bigger man who, while he doesn't necessarily cover ground, insanely quickly, he's not slow, and he shuts that pass and he engages at smart times. So it makes sense to at least start Gakpo up the middle, but you're right, he does need that pace in behind. Harvey Elliott playing as a left winger is not going to be a natural fit. I did think he was better there today than he was against Chelsea, but like it's because of the fact that I think he understood how to move in field in a forward manner better. There was nothing that he is going to do to be able to hold width on the left, and it shut Robertson away from being able to get anywhere near up the left flank. So we had no width coming up the left. And I think the more narrow you can make us, and this has been true of the Klopp era in general, the more narrow you make us, the less effective we are in attack, because we are very, very predicated upon spreading teams. And then, chaos comes from when they're unsettled and taken out of shape. But we're allowing teams to stay in shape with what we do right now anyway, which is why the chance creation is not great.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Yeah, it was very strange. I haven't noted this down, but it seemed a lot of our play was focused down the right. And obviously, we mentioned Moore getting more involved. I think Trent was more involved in a going forward manner than Robbo. But it seemed we were using Naby as the out ball quite often instead of Thiago as well, which it can make sense because I think Naby's obviously very capable on the ball as well. But I think he was certainly their pressing target. But normally we see, obviously it's usually Van Dijk and we hit a diagonal, that's an option as well. But out of the midfielders, you just go, Thiago's there. But that didn't seem to be the case at all today. I mean, you mentioned the lack of width. Do you think it was just there was better out balls on the right, which obviously we saw joy from at times with the number of chances we created in the first 15 minutes?
There definitely were better out balls down the right. The thing I think that killed us, and the thing that I think also neuters Trent a little bit, is that the long switch from him to get him being able to switch wings isn't going to be on if Robertson's going to get pinned so far back. Without that, and that long switch from Trent to Robertson has been a hallmark of our attacks for years. If we don't have that, we are a lot more one-dimensional, and we have to try to play slowly through the lines, which, quite frankly, is not a thing that we've ever actually been good at.
Yeah, it's only quick counter-attacks you see that, isn't it? We never really do a Man City goal, do we? It's not our thing.
The only way we could do one is if we're actually playing against them.
Oh, that's true. That is true. But I think that's always been the case for City. You play through, if you are capable, you can play through them. But that was for years ago when it was happy to talk about Liverpool. We'll get back to the actual game. I think this is where Brighton start to grow into it. I've got 14 minutes where we clear one off the line. Really well defended by Trent, to be fair to him. I think it was Ferguson who had the shot. Bacetic then gets booked. Naby goes for a fly, and I think everyone thought he was going to be injured because, one, it's Naby, and two, he was about 8 foot in the air and landed very uncomfortably. And then 21, Brighton cutting through was at the time. Mitoma has a weak shot, but it was a really nice play. I think it summarises us as a club at the minute. Oh, no disrespect to Brighton because, well, they're a better team than us this season, clearly. I think someone said they're beating us like 8-4 on aggregate this season or something like that. Maybe 10-4. But even with our midfield, that I think that's our best midfield. I think we'll obviously come on to
that. Unquestionably. Yes. Unquestionably.
But they still cut through us at times at will. And I don't know what else we can do. And obviously we'll come on to the subs and Fabinho, Jesus. Long stare for that poor blow. But is this just a sign that Brighton have got better? We've obviously got worse, but I think Brighton, I don't want to disrespect Brighton, but they look excellent at times, but it feels like that's the most un-Liverpool thing ever, is the team playing through us.
I think the way we play just suits how they play. I'm willing to bet by the end of the season we'll probably finish with a higher points total with them, because the higher, you know, the output you can get out of at least our still very good players is probably better than the output you'll get out of their very good players. But mm-hmm. We'll probably finish with a higher points total than them. But we just all, so like, typically I tend to think that that's actually how I would evaluate a better team is just who's better against the entirety of the league that they're playing against rather than head to head. But we just suit how they play, right? Like, we try to be, like, especially when we try to press, because they have so many press-resistant players who are good on the ball. And the way De Zerbi has structured them has given them the structure in a manner that allows them to play through us and create overloads in central areas, but then also quickly switch the ball out wide to create chances. Because every single time Kaoru Matoma gets the ball, they seem to be completely in business. And make no mistake, their strategy was to get him on the ball as often as possible. And a lot of that just comes from trying to get the ball into the middle and playing it quickly out wide rather than just, you know, playing it to a fullback and then trying to get Matoma, you know, down the line. They're creating good angles for him to attack. And I think that really just suits them to a T against us because we allow those angles.
Talk about Matoma. Obviously sad today because he does things against us, but what's Google saying? 2.6 million he cost. And I think they signed him either last January and then he stayed in Japan for a loan or something like that. I might be wrong in that.
But had to finish his thesis on dribbling.
He'd certainly shown it today. this is more of a general question than the game, but why can't we do this? Why can't we find lads out of obscurity for 2 million? Even our big, Robbo's our biggest ever bargain, I think most people would say. Even he was in the Premier League. He was still looking somewhat impressive at Hull. But picking out lads from the Japanese League, it's like, that's just crazy. Like, Brighton's so impressive in that.
They are. He's an exceptional footballer. That guy needs to be playing Champions League football. He seems to always play down their left. So for it wouldn't make a ton of sense for us to sign him as another left winger. But if he could play down the right, and we could get him at a reasonable price. You know, that could be a very good long term Mo Salah replacement. Mo is in his 30s, and we do have to think about when that time comes. But I love that player. He's fantastic. Like he's tactically pretty good in that, you know, he gets the ball, like I said, gets the ball at good angles. And he's able to just cover so much ground. And he seems to be just much faster with the ball at his feet than almost anybody I've seen us play against this season, save maybe Kvaradona. Like that kind of dribbling winger is something that I really miss, and get well soon, Luis Diaz.
Yes, please. Mind, we like signing left wingers, so why not get another one? We'll make one of them a central midfielder. Looking at you, Gakpo. You move further down. You get deeper. But no, obviously, you look at Brighton. I mean, Casado's the one I think everyone wants. Obviously, he's going to cost a bazillion pound, but if he's still at Brighton in the summer, maybe that's more negotiable. But pie in the sky stuff, because we need a lot of midfielders on the evidence of this season and today. But we'll come on that when the subs arrive. Where am I in my notes? Next up, Moore misses a 1v1 after nice play from Elliott. It was a lovely pass, to be fair. We mentioned Moore getting more involved, but I think this is where we see the lack of confidence, because I think in his link-up play, I think it's still there. He obviously gets the assist in a minute as well, but Mo in front of goal, I think he's second. I think this is Premier League stats, but I think he's second behind Darwin in terms of big chances missed. It's just not the same blow. And we have seen this at times. I think the centre-back season, he obviously went on a bit of a barren run before we brought in the actual centre-backs again. But he does have this streak in him at times, but then he seems to explode. But the explosion doesn't seem to be coming.
It really doesn't. It seemed like it was... It came a little bit in the first half of the season pre-World Cup, right after Rangers, where he went on a run, like you had him destroy Spurs very quickly. But then since the World Cup, it just hasn't been there. Like his two goals after the World Cup were one against Villa and then you know, one that's made off of an absolutely freak mistake by a Wolves defender when he's in an offside position.
But yes.
It just has not been clicking. Like, how many times are you used to seeing Mo get in that situation with the keeper rushing out, and instead of trying to place it in the corner, he just chips him? Like, just clips it over him, ball goes nicely into the center of the net. Like, I think when a lot of strikers struggle, and I have no evidence of this because I've never played striker at an elite level, they try too hard to find the corners rather than just realize that the ball needs to go where the keeper isn't and in the net. And it looked like he was trying to just nestle that ball into the corner rather than the instinctive type of, you know, chip it and we'll figure out where the ball's going, you know, chip it and then run back and celebrate. So, yeah, there's just something that's a bit off. And it's, you know, it's a combination of the fact that finishing is both very fickle. Strikers will run hot and cold, and then they will go on streaks of bagging goals versus not. But there is a linkage to confidence on that. I think you're completely correct. In front of the goal, he gets it, and he's just pressing to try to score. We've seen Darwin do that this season. We've seen Mo do that this season. That's why that missed chance stat that you cited comes up. And, you know, for as much as the midfield is and our tactical approach is ripped up, which, you know, deservedly so, it does make you wonder where we'd be in the league and, you know, and actually in this FA Cup if those two are taking those chances with greater regularity. Like, they're not going to score all of them, but you'd like them to score more of them.
At least a quarter of them, too.
I think, good big chance finishing rates are considered, like, you know, I think the big chance is defined as, like, a 33% chance of scoring. Like, I think it's, like, a 0.35 XG. So, you know, scoring one in three is, you know, is considered average. If you can get someplace between that and, like, a half one in two, you're probably comfortably outperforming that average. But, you know, being well below it is a bad place to be.
It really is. But the thing is, I think that it was promising in the fact, as I mentioned, we got more involved than probably any time, especially post-World Cup, maybe except Villa, where he did score. But just when he gets there, it's just not there. But I think if we are going to run with this front three till I think Jota's the next one back, and then Darwin can just be a chaos off the bench, or if we find the right opponent, we can just whack him in to run at people or run beyond people. At least that link-up play was there, because Elliot got more involved playing narrower. Mo was running in behind rather than holding hands with the assistant referee. And Gakpo, first half, he was involved. Maybe it wasn't always sparkling, but no one is this season. So I think there's at least something to build on with the front three.
Yeah, there is. And Gakpo did and I'm not saying that he's remotely to the level of when he was doing this, but he looked like Bobby at least used to look, where he could drop deep, collect the ball and connect play. Right. That's what it's. And also at the same time, you know, provide some of the ball pressure that we've been sorely missing from our center forwards this season when Bobby hasn't played or Jota hasn't played. But he at least, at the very least, it looked finally today like he got used to the pace of playing in English football. And it was the first game where he really at least seemed to not be completely at sea. He didn't look to take any terrible shots on himself as well, which was something we saw against Chelsea. So, you know, he definitely just seemed to play a lot more within the flow of the game. And that's what we need from him, because if he's going to play as that, you know, deep false nine who's going to connect play, what you want from someone doing that is to be, you know, in sync with the pace of the game and then allow themselves to manipulate that pace of that game. I think Gakpo did a reasonably good job of that today. He showed you that he's got very good feet. Like, he looks a little bit awkward sometimes running, because, and I think that's just a byproduct of being 6'4", because guys who are that big when they're running can look very awkward. But he, you know, the feet were good. He used the ball economically and well. He tried to put people in good positions to, he was good with working with overloads with Harvey and then trying to play that last pass into either Mo or then later on to, you know, people who had good positions to cross the ball or put the ball through. But I thought it was, if we're looking for a bright spot in that game that, you know, deteriorated rapidly, I think Gakpo at least was that, you know, a reasonably bright spot because he looked to, you know, finally come to grips with what's being asked of him within the system. But it's still going to come down to the fact that if we're going to play him, giving him two runners that can come in behind will only make him more effective. And I can't see that this front three is something that I'd want to do for the long term. And as soon as we get another forward back, I think you really have to consider, Harvey is a bench option for the right wing, or even if, you know, if we're going to continue this way, even maybe playing the center forward role a bit more, because he doesn't offer you what you need a penetrating forward to offer you. And that's what you need from the other forwards besides Gakpo.
Yeah. I think it's weird with Elliot because I think everyone thinks back up to Mo, but they don't really play the same. And we've tried the midfield thing, and I think maybe people at the start of the season thought he might have been the issue. He was not the issue, but he was still somewhat of an issue in there. But I think just finding him in the right positions, I think whether he starts on the right, the left, the middle, or whatever, just get him on the ball in behind a runner, and I think that's where we see Elliot as best. So maybe we just don't need to get bogged down with where he starts, but we just got to put him in the positions on the pitch.
And if we think about Harvey today, he creates one of our best chances, and you're probably going to come to it soon.
Yes, next thing.
He scores our best chance. So, you know, he really did not have a bad game at all either.
He was probably up there, one of the better ones, yeah, to be fair. Not the best. No, Ibu exists. Although he should have.
Yes, Ibu.
Maybe should have got a red card. But we can forgive that. Then my next note is the goal. I mean, Naby somehow got accused of a handball. I don't know why. Two more, then it's a nice easy pass for Mo, to be fair, for Elliot. Good finish. What Mo should have done like 5 minutes earlier. But I mean, I think there's a few people to talk about here. We've done Mo and Elliot. We'll go through the goal, but then we have to do every time Naby starts, because Twitter debate, midfielder, Naby Keita versus John Henderson, etc. We'll do Naby in a sec. But no, it is a lovely goal. It's a nice finish. And then it just kind of made a damp squib because of the handball crack with VAR. But no, it was a really nice finish from Harvey.
Don't you miss when we were able to play from our own end into the other team's goal in like three passes? Like, I really miss that. Yeah. And that goal was a reminder of that. It was a gorgeous counterattack. The ball from Naby, a volley while pressed on his off foot that's played perfectly into Mo's path is something that is the kind of quality we sorely need from our midfield. As much as you want guys, you know, the midfield that's going to be full of industry, we're not going to have that, because that's not what Naby and Thiago, I mean, they are full of industry, but neither one of them are guys you'd consider to be extraordinarily powerful players like Jordan Henderson or Fabinho of a few years ago. But they also do come with a trade-off of significantly better technical ability. And Naby showed that on quite a few occasions. There were some good bursting runs, but this ball was fantastically played. And yeah, it's just, you know, it was like a payout to the Liverpool of old. And I wish that I wish I could see more of it, because I think that's our, if we're going to get anything out of the league season or the Champions League, we need more of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I'm going to look at our fixtures whilst I ask you this, because do we play Wolves then Madrid?
Wolves, then Everton, then Madrid.
Okay, so we have breaks. I was going to ask you about midfield rotation, but that's for future podcasters' problem. But Naby, he's obviously very divisive in the fandom and stuff like that. Nobody should be questioning whether he should be starting at the minute. Obviously, the sub-performances we'll come on to, we may even just mention now because it's timely, but he wasn't 10 out of 10. He wasn't even 9 or 8. He was probably just a 7 out of 10. But, like, he helped Trent more than any midfielder has this season. He did his defensive work. He's part of the goal. He was probably our midfielder trying to do the most, because Thiago didn't have the best day and we didn't really use him all that often. Bacicic was good, but it's not his job to do that. But it's weird because we obviously got the contrasting reports a couple, maybe a week ago, when I think it was German media said he might be still in contract discussions, and I think it was Jimbo who said no, they'd probably leave on a free, or might have been Dom King or someone like that. And then Neil Jones said there's still chance of a contract. At the minute, he's our second best midfielder. We have to buy a lot of midfielders in the summer.
Yes. At the minute, you can make an argument that he's our best midfielder. Thiago has looked... Thiago's been fantastic. I am a huge Thiago Alcantara fan. He looked sluggish today, and I do wonder if the amount of minutes that he's going to have to play or and has already played as, you know, the only one of our 30 and up midfielders who's... Or I'm considering Fab 30 and up, even though he's playing like mini... Spiritually.
He's 45.
But, he, you know, Thiago, I think, is showing some signs of being overplayed a little bit, which is why, you know,
yes.
I don't want to go too deeply into this on this podcast. I'm pretty sure you could agree, but that's why not going into the market makes no sense. Because we're going to burn him out, and we're going to it's just going to end his career earlier because of the minute load that he's going to play over the last two seasons. But yeah, I mean, I think Naby has to start every match. Like he our best midfield right now is that three. I do wonder if playing Naby and Thiago can help, and if we're playing that compact, can help Fabinho perform slightly better.
Not after today's performance. He's having a timeout again after today.
Yeah, I would say that I want to be optimistic that he can, but I'm also not insane. So
yeah,
but yeah, I mean that's your best midfield three, Naby. Naby is going to be the one who's going to be the most attacking in that three because Thiago is, even though he's not a six, is a very defensively switched on midfielder. Not that Naby.
We tried him as a 10, and it haunts me to this day.
I don't understand why we did that. I mean, that is the one thing. If you want to talk about one distinct tactical improvement over the last time we went to Brighton, it was not playing Thiago as a 10.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's this midfield also just has the I mean, we've talked about the compactness, but it also does have the most back to front balance because Bazicic is a good ball playing defensive midfielder for a kid his age. Thiago, we obviously know his ability to play on the ball and be press resistant, but he's much more of a middle third midfielder. And Naby is a middle third who can move into the attacking third midfielder. So you are balanced a bit better with this midfield than you are with any other combination of personnel we have at the moment as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think this is probably the best way to answer it because the league, we may get top four. We might, if we go on a run. But I think most people would agree our most important game, Real Madrid. Is it too much to play Bacic against Real Madrid, or do you just roll with it? Because even if our best team was available, we might still lose to Real Madrid. We might as well just roll with the young lad. But as you say, this can sound stupid because Fabinho literally had a 0 out of 10 and should have definitely been sent off, but we will... Might as well. He will, but he should have been sent off.
He absolutely should have been sent off for that. It's a terrible tackle, and I really hope that Evan Ferguson's okay. And Fabinho immediately knew, too. He immediately knew that he had done it. Like, Say what you will, that you know, he didn't try to walk away from a car. He didn't try to walk away from it there and was, you know, the faintest of praise again. At least he was honest about it. But, I think unless you strike some other form of gold in the next 2 weeks, you roll this midfielding out against Real Madrid. And if they get embarrassed and tonked, they get embarrassed and tonked. But, you know, you'd rather, I'd rather do that with what I have best and just hope that either Bobby Firmino or Diogo Jota are back and that Virgil van Dijk is back. Because I think, the, you know, at this point, that midfield three is actually pretty decent and looks, you know, looks of the standard to be one of the better three, you know, units of three in the Premier League. It's the drop off that what happens after those three come off. That's
the thing. I think Naby can probably play 60 at most. He played 90 in the cup and he looked fine, but that was the cup.
Yeah, I mean, I also wonder, and I hope that I was wrong with this. I did note that Naby at one point in the beginning of the second half grabbed at the back of his leg for a second. He did get up and consistently look to be able to move. He did get up and be able to look around pretty freely, but was subbed off not too far after. So you have to also wonder if, like, it's just the type of thing where he's told any possible, you know, you feel literally anything, tell us and you're going to come off.
Even at home, if your leg falls asleep, you've got to the medical center. If it is anything, you rest him until we play Real Madrid.
Yeah, we're gonna send over two people with a Theragun and an ice bath.
Yes, absolutely. Cryo freeze like Kante against us. Oh god, I didn't notice that. That's sad. But hopefully he's fine. If he needs to be rested,
He was moving around fine after. It was, to be clear, from a play where there was contact rather than non-contact. If it was non-contact, I'd be screaming.
Yes. No, that's good. And he survived falling 8 foot in the air, so if he was going to get injured, it would have been then.
Didn't understand how that wasn't carded either, but David Coote is low-key one of the worst referees in world football.
He genuinely is, and even if we take our Liverpool hat off, Brighton fans, yes, he is shit. We've known this a while. You know it today. my next note is their goal. It's not even worth talking about. Like, there's nothing we could have really done. Obviously, maybe Bacetic could have closed down rather than Naby because he was two foot closer. I'm not criticising an 18-year-old for that. It's just bad luck. It was going miles wide. It comes off Lewis Duncan, goes in. I saw someone say Alisson should maybe have saved that. You're drunk.
No. No. If you're looking to like hold any sort of anything from Liverpool to account for that goal, it's, you could sit there and, like, the worst faith you can give it is it's a bad defensive header from Trent. Like, okay, where else is he supposed to head the ball? Like, he's going backwards and he's just trying to get it clear. And that we didn't close down the second ball quick enough, which, again, you don't expect a guy to hit the ball, have it wildly deflected from distance and wrong foot your keeper. So, you know, sometimes when you're bad, luck also goes against you, and that's what that was.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. Elliot has a chance. Oh, no, not a chance. I think he has a chance to get a chance. And then he has a first touch that's really nice. Then the second touch just lets Lamptey get a tackle in. And that's basically the first half before we have to talk about the bad half of football, Justin. Anything from the first half you think missed or worth talking about, or any players you think worth talking about from that half?
Yeah, no, I think we've covered all. But again, I think that if you're going to talk about a player who had a tale of two halves, Joe Gomez was quite decent in the first half. And then we can talk about the disaster that happens when you remove all midfield cover from him.
Yeah. I think any other centre-back other than Van Dijk last couple years and Ibu Konate would probably be the same, to be fair. But yeah, we'll come on to that. My first note is literally Brighton are kind of battering us this half. And that goes, that my next note is the substitutes at 60 minutes. So that's not a good start for this half. And to be honest, as soon as we go bad, my notes are just, it's kind of go to shit because I'm just watching the game behind the sofa, basically. We started this half poorly. I think did they bring Veltman on at halftime, if I remember correctly? They brought him on, not saying that's the catalyst for change, but whatever De Zerbi did at halftime, it certainly worked for them. We just could not get the ball out of our own half at all. I think they were pressing all our midfielders, the fullbacks were penned in, and I think Gakpo was seeing Premier League, the struggles with the Premier League again, where he was up against Lewis Dunk, who is the probably most prototypical Premier League centre-back going. He's just a big man who's really physical. I'm not saying that's his main trait, but he's a good defender. But it just seemed we were just pinned in by maybe there's a better prepared team or more confident, better prepared team in that half. It just seemed a real struggle for us.
Yeah, it feels like a common recurring theme as of late has been that other teams make adjustments to what we're doing at halftime, and we just think that we can plow ahead with more of the same. To me, the big problem that occurred was you can only go so long without the ability to play in behind someone when you have they're going to be, and you know what that allows Brighton to do is continually bring their line closer and closer. If you don't have anything that can threaten them behind you, why do you have to defend that? Why defend that space? Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's critically what happened there. Now, we're obviously going to get to the subs, but before the substitutions came, I think Klopp saw the problem. I think his prescription to solving it was quite poor. Trent was getting roasted by Matoma, but literally everybody gets roasted by Matoma if you give him space. James Milner is not going to get beaten by him any less. And I guess maybe, you know, yeah, I mean, I said this before the show, so I might as well with this. This felt like Klopp had three subs planned for 60 minutes, and he was going to do them regardless of what the game state was, and he did not deviate from that plan. That looked like a substitution informed by, you know, strict adherence to some sort of either notion of sports science or a plan around managing minutes and not trying to win the match, because I would not have taken Naby or Trent off. I would have just brought Darwin on and used one of my later subs. And, you know, Gags said this in the match chat Discord, but I agree with this. I would have at least given it a few minutes with that midfield and Trent there with Darwin there to see how it looked, because at some point that's going to be your favorite. At some point that might be a favorite front three for a match, and you'd like to see if that potentially works and gives you an idea going forward rather than changing the personnel as to where the tactics you're trying now are no longer that, right? Or can't be executed with that personnel. And, you know, obviously Jordan Henderson and Naby Keita couldn't have two more differing skill sets, which is, I think, why the, you know, which is, I think, actually the valid portion of the Keita-Hendo wars that I usually try to avoid.
We'll get right into it. No. But the thing is, I think they were controlling the game, but it wasn't like we were under bombardment in terms of chances created. I think Matoma obviously trying to roast Trent, which he did a couple times in that half. I don't think it led to a clear-cut chance at all. Obviously, I think the next one is the other one I've next match down is Solly March's chance, which we'll come on to in a sec. I think that's the only chance I've noted down.
By the way, I have a question. Has anybody ever referred to Solly March by just the last name March?
Like, no.
No, yeah, okay. I'm just trying to figure this out. But, you know, I think perhaps a fair way to view, or at least how I viewed the first 60 minutes, I don't necessarily know if this is fair or if I'm just watching it from my bias. So if you hear this and you think that I'm wrong, please let me know nicely, because I'm not going to respond if you're a dick. I think for 60 minutes, up until the subs, they controlled the match, but we had the better chances. And, you know, if you're going away to a team in cup competition, you'll take that. That's a pattern of a game that you would take, especially when you're not playing particularly well. But that was just for 60 minutes of a 90-minute game.
And to be fair, I think it wasn't, like, I think the first half, I mean, they controlled the first 20 minutes of the second half, definitely. But the first half, I think it was a bit more back and forward. I think they probably had more possession. This should be really easy for me to check, but who's asked? But yeah, we definitely had the more chances. Didn't know Danny Welbeck was playing until he got subbed off, etc. But yeah, the first half was something promising. The second half, I agree with you. I think, and if you were going to make a change in midfield, bring Curtis Jones on. I'm not a Curtis Jones fan. I don't see it. But I know what the fuck Jordan Henderson is in 2023. Curtis Jones will help out James Milner more than Jordan Henderson nowadays. So if this big change, and obviously Klopp, every time he drops someone, he always mentions it's a knock or it's an injury or he had something in training. Just roll with it. You've made the decision. I don't believe they're injured. Maybe Darwin, because he looked really drunk when he came on, or he looked fucked or whatever. But John Henderson, come on. Just say, don't say anything. Bring on Jones and let's see what these lads can do, because you obviously don't give too much of a toss about the cup competition.
Yeah, he's a 32-year-old footballer who's been the captain of Liverpool Football Club and has been in the crosshairs for an entire section of the fan base for a long time. He can take it, right? He knows if he doesn't know how to deal with that criticism by now, he never will. And you're never going to be able to protect him from it anyway. So just say, you know, I understand trying to protect a player's feelings, but sometimes you can do that just by not saying anything. You know, if nobody's asked you why they're, you know, I haven't seen the question that was asked that led him to that response around the injury. I haven't seen it. So I don't understand the context, but if the question is why Jordan Henderson isn't playing, you just make the answer about Naby, Thiago, and Bastic playing well. Don't make the answer about Jordan Henderson, right? It's fairly straightforward, and there's a way to protect both Henderson's feelings while, you know, giving the other guys a boost in the press. And I know that Klopp is a very good man manager, so I know that probably what he's doing behind closed doors possibly alleviates this, although I don't know because I'm not there. But, I don't think it's necessary. I don't love, you know, I'm not a big fan of hanging on the every word, but I think your assessment's pretty spot on. You don't have to say anything.
Yeah. And to be fair, the season's kind of shit either way. Even if we scrape top four, it's still a shit season. as well see what Jones can do. Because either way, he's either going to end up on loan or he's going to end up on sold, or he's going to be, presumably, if we do stuff in the summer, sixth or seventh choice centre mid.
I don't need a VPN. I've got nothing to hide. This is what I used to tell myself before I hooked up with LibertyShield.com. Not only is my home internet now fully encrypted, but I can now access all the websites I want, whenever I want, and do so from absolutely anywhere. As a Liverpool fan, I love to know I can now watch every match, regardless of whether it's on UK TV or not. My Liberty Shield VPN makes sure nothing is blocked and guarantees me super fast streaming speed throughout that match. You can get connected right now with their software package, which includes a 48-hour no obligation free trial and instant access to their apps for Apple, Android, Fire TV, PC, Mac, and Android TV. Or go a step further like I have and get one of their pre-configured VPN routers. These small but powerful devices allow you to easily connect every device in your home to VPN, making it the perfect solution for smart TVs, Mac boxes, and games consoles. Visit LibertyShield.com today and use coupon code AIVPN25 to get 25% off at checkout.
Might as well see.
Yeah, or you know, the unlikely thing, and I kind of, I mean, we could talk about Curtis for a second. I'm a little bit more high on you because on him than because of the technical ability and the overall size and athleticism, but he just doesn't really kind of seem to know how to play football, and that's the problem. It's the footballing instincts at the moment haven't come. And I think it's, you know, the only way they do come is more minutes in meaningful games, and he just hasn't had enough of them. Some of it's unfortunate due to injuries, but some of it I think is mismanagement.
And I think this is a point Dave always made. The right side midfield position and, well, role more importantly, is his. It should be his. I don't know why we've turned him into Ginny Wijnaldum, but not as good defensively. Like, let him do stuff that was natural to him 4 years ago. Let him be a bit more attacking. But as I said, he's more defensively responsible than the older lads. It's just a bit strange. It's a bit steep. But yeah, as you said, I think it's pre-planned. Get the experienced lads on there. Get the captain, vice-captain on. maybe Trent was pre-planned because he didn't. Well, he didn't look happy when he came off, did he? Maybe he thought, maybe he just liked the duel with Mitoma, but he does have. He has a bit of a resting bitch face, so it might have just been that. But he didn't look happy.
He did not look happy at all. I would kind of get it if he didn't look happy. It's also, again, he's another player who hasn't trained much lately, even though he had a full week in training this week. So to me, it does suggest that, you know, these are just enforced substitutions with a lack of desire to deviate from that particular plan. And to me, that suggests that maybe that there's not too much care or concern about maintaining a run in the FA Cup, because if you're trying to win this game, you go about it in a very different way.
You absolutely do. You absolutely do. To be fair, we mentioned the subs. I think Milner came on and did a couple nice things straight away. He obviously created the more chance. I think that was literally a couple minutes after. I think the defender slides in front of Moore and it puts him off, but I think what Moore does after that is probably the bigger issue. Rather than connecting with the cross, he kind of rabbit in headlights and he just kicks it at the keeper. Then the 68th minute, I put Milner penalty question mark. Maybe if we were Man United, but no other football team, I'd probably say would get that, especially with David Coote in charge.
I would like to know, when is the last penalty we got in the season? I know we haven't gotten one in the league. Have we gotten one in the Champions League? Because we definitely didn't in the League Cup or FA Cup. So I'm intrigued to understand the last time we got a penalty.
It would have been Rangers, surely, when we talked
about it. Yeah, and I'm not sure if we got a penalty in that match. I can't remember if we, but the whole point there is, but you know what it is? It's the Milner, that's possibly a foul other spots on the pitch, so potentially should be a foul in the box, but we also know that referees referee the context of where it happens, in particular David Coote. He was never going to give that, but I would be annoyed if that was given against us. But yeah, I think, you know, the other thing with getting penalties is that you actually have to have the, you know, touches in the other team's area to get them. So, we should work on that.
Our last penalty was the Rangers home game, the 2-0.
Ooh, that is a long time.
And before that was the Community Shield. and then it was Fabinho against Watford in April. Well, yes. Fun times. So you're the key. You need to get more games. And shout out David Coote. God. But we don't deserve penalties nowadays. So we don't touch the bloody ball, as you say.
And we don't make defenders commit to us.
True. I think Darwin should get one because he just... Well, not on today's evidence, but in general, he causes that much trouble. He will get penalties. Just play him a bit more. And hopefully he remembers how to play football, because today was a bit funky. My next one is the Alisson save. We mentioned Ibu, and we'll mention him some more, because he does a big block after this. But we can never forget that Alisson is a big, beautiful bastard.
Yeah, he's a tremendous goalkeeper who I feel terribly for, because there's only so much he can do, and I feel like goalkeepers take losses probably tougher than anybody else as the last line of defense. It's the loneliest position in the sport, and he's done nothing to there's nothing he could have done for either of their goals, and he's done very little wrong this season. So I do feel for him, because it's a good save that he makes, right? Is it, you know, relatively routine for him? Yeah, but he makes the routine, you know, he makes the routine look easy, and he did that again there.
Absolutely. We would be probably about 15th without him. So I think I mentioned it after the mistake against Wolves. He could like put in 7 own goals and he'd still be out player of the season. Next sub, Jones on for Thiago again. You mentioned Thiago getting overplayed. Maybe we could have subbed off Thiago initially and then swapped it about. But yeah, I think Thiago does. If Naby's okay, maybe he's one we can rotate against Wolves. But as we say, we need that midfield to play as much as possible. But we do need to protect the two 8 lads as well, because injuries and overplaying is part of the issue there. Eboo o'clock. Now, my notes here are, Eboo is a babe, massive block. 1 minute later, I jinxed him. He should probably be sent off. So, he played fantastically, but there was a moment there, on another day, he could have been sent off, because it was... I thought it was shoulder to shoulder initially, but it did kind of go shoulder to back.
There's a little bit of shoulder to back. It is a last man situation. I'm shocked that VAR didn't check it, but I guess can VAR check? This is where I'm so unclear about the application of VAR. Can VAR check for the denial of a goal scoring opportunity? Like, I was under the impression that it can.
I thought it could, but my commentators said they couldn't check because it wasn't a penalty. But I thought they could check red cards.
I thought they could check red cards too. But is it the rule that they can only check foul? You know, possible violent foul play.
Did they give a foul? Did they give a free kick at all for that? I can't remember.
I don't think they did.
That might be why. Because if they give a foul and he give a yellow card, I think they could upgrade it.
Yeah,
because he didn't give it a foul, they can't upgrade it. Which is really stupid, and I don't understand. How do you fuck up using a replay?
I don't know how you fuck up using a replay. And look, we got lucky, because if Ibu's not, granted, obviously, it's denial of a goal-scoring opportunity is a one-game suspension instead of a three, but we need... Ibu is...
The glue. Frankly,
he's probably our, besides Allison, our most critical player at the moment.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that.
and without him against Wolves, even though, Wolves isn't a particularly great side, I would not like to see what either Raul Jimenez or Mateus Cunha could do against us, because those are two guys who could give Gomez and Matip in a pairing a real handful, even though Jimenez cannot head the ball.
Nope, and it probably wouldn't matter because, well, we've seen Matip this season not great, and Gomez is basically a coin flip. But as we did say, Gomez with a good midfield was fine. With a bad midfield, was shit.
He's bad, yeah.
Maybe it'd be the same for Matip, to be fair. Where are we up to? I mean, let's talk about Eboo, because we're near the end, and it's obviously going to finish on a negative with us conceding, but let's get a positive in there. I mean, he is the next in line for me, and this is all the Liverpool bias, but I am on a Liverpool podcast, so I don't give a shit. He's the next in line for best centre-back in the world. I don't give a fuck about your Salibas, your Arejos, your Koundés. This lad is 6'5", fast as fuck. And
good on the ball.
The thing is, yeah, he's fantastic on the ball. And the thing is, obviously pace is a massive weapon for him, or a recovery tool for him. But he's positionally fantastic as well. It's not like he relies on the pace. He uses it like Matoma's fucking lightning. He'll use it against Matoma. But he's positionally fantastic. He doesn't over-rely on his pace, which we see, like, let's say Rudiger. I think he relies on his pace. Whereas Eboo, I just think he's one of the most complete centre-backs at the minute. And if it wasn't for us being a fucking shit show, he'd probably be the best centre-back in the league. But we can't say that because the rest of us are a fucking mess.
It's the, I think that people overuse that Maldini, if I had to make a tackle, I've done wrong thing. But there, I think that people overuse that to gauge center backs, but there is a truth hidden in it, which is, or not even that deeply hidden, which is positioning is everything. And, if you're in the right space and you can read a game well as a center back, you're going to put out a lot of fires constantly, because you're gonna sniff danger. Eboo has that thing where he can sniff danger. He's constantly proactively defending, and we've seen at our best, that we have one guy whose responsibility is to proactively defend, and one guy whose responsibility it is to clean up everything behind. And we have guys who can do one of the two roles. But the thing that makes Van Dijk special, and the thing that's gonna make that makes Eboo special, is they can do both. Right. Mm-hmm. You put them in a pairing with a guy who's going to, see ball, head ball, like Joel Matip. The two of them are going to be able to sweep up behind. If you put them in a situation where they need to be the proactive one, they both can do it. I think I agree with you. I think he is the heir to the throne of best central defender in the world, if, to be perfectly honest, not already there. Because I do think that he has shown, just when you drop him into a very good team, that he is a ceiling raiser. And I'm glad we have him, but I want to keep getting more structure around him so that we don't have to rely on him to do as much as he did today.
Yes, let's give him and Alisson a hand, shall we? My next note. Fabinho. Sweet, sweet Fabinho. I missed 2018, Justin. Fucking
hell. I did too.
God. Pre-pandemic, we had midfielders with working limbs. Good Lord. I mean, do you want to talk about Bacicic to get a happy? We'll make it a compliment sandwich, but we'll go shit, you know, good shit instead.
There's an organizational psychology method that tells you that if you're going to criticize someone's performance, you should do so by providing a compliment to start, get to the criticism in the middle, and finish it on a nice note. So we'll do that here. I mean, Bacicic, for a second game, Chelsea being the first one, managed to play pretty well and play intelligently about how he tackled on a yellow, which is a skill beyond his years. For an 18-year-old central midfielder, that it plays in a situation where you're going to have to commit yourself to challenges, that's an impressive skill. Bacicic is an incredible young talent, and I look forward to seeing him develop as a Liverpool player, but I also think that it's very unfair on the kid that he is being put into a situation where he needs to play this much this early in his career, is we've also seen what overplaying young players does to them.
That's the thing. You want to see more of him, but you don't. You don't want to have to see more of him at the same time, which is the worry. But no, I think he is the real deal, because we've had... I don't think false dawns, but like Morton, obviously out on loan at Blackburn. I don't see Bacicic going out on loan to Blackburn unless we do sign five midfielders in the window in the summer, which we will not do. At 18, it's so promising but so worrying at the same time that we have to play him. And the reason why it is that we have to play him is this Fabinho cameo. Holy shit. First thing he does is give away the ball. Then we mentioned it already. Should 100% have been sent off. No clue how Coop missed that, for one. And whoever the fuck was on VAR must have been on a take to have this finish 11v11. Jesus Christ. But I've always thought Fabinho will improve once we take out Henderson, because I do think he's been overworked in terms of covering for Henderson's physical decline. But Jesus fucking Christ, he's not helping me with my argument there.
He's not, but I still think it's a victim of... I think you're right, but I think there's a bit of victim of circumstance in the game state and situation he's come into. We're under pressure, and... I think we all learned a while ago, and I think I have to credit Stephen Drennan with pointing this out, via a Twitter thread on this. Henderson and Fabinho used to be able to play together when Henderson could solve problems with his running.
Mm-hmm.
Henderson can't solve problems with his running anymore. So what it does is, you're right, it exposes making Fabinho cover more space. And Fabinho, even in his pomp, while he could cover space, he's not the best athlete. His ability to do things is predicated upon the fact that he's, pretty strong, technically good, and reads the game well. But there's no level of reading the game well when you're as stretched as we are, where an immobile player is going to be able to positively impact the game. They're always going to be put under pressure, and he's been a parking cone this season. And some of that is the doing of the fact that he can't move, and some of it is just that we've become extremely good at tactically exposing our older central midfielders from movements down our right side. Now, nobody is going to look good when the right side of your team is Jordan Henderson and James Milner.
True. Very true. Yeah, it's just annoying because I think after the World Cup, I think the Man City game, he came on and he looked alive again. And then I think he may have started the Villa game and looked promising again. And then it's kind of reverted back. Now, I mentioned we obviously have to protect Bacetic because he's 18 and you said don't want to overplay him. Maybe we do that thing Klopp does because we've seen him. Someone has a nightmare. We see Lovren against Tottenham. Then he played, I think he played the next game. I might be wrong in that, but he certainly wasn't put to one side. Maybe we just give him the Wolves game because, as we say, Wolves aren't the best team. They're obviously improved massively since Lopetegui went in there. Try and get the cobwebs off Fabinho, but for the love of, don't bring both him and Henderson back in.
No,
if you
I
are
think
going to bring one back in, I should say.
Yeah, I think that the Wolves game gives us the perfect opportunity for the NFT midfield. Something that, you know, this is where the personnel groupings thing comes in for me. Like, and I don't think that this is going to ring true this season, other than, you know, me just trying to find some obscure reason for hope. But Jordan Henderson and Naby Keita have actually always played well together. Fabinho and Thiago have always played well together. But Henderson and Fabinho have, they played well together, obviously, for long stretches.
In the last couple of years,
though, probably since around the 2021 season, the two of them have been...
Have been
unable to play well together. And I think it's just... Part of it is finding tactics that suit what we have, but part of it is also finding the personnel groups in midfield where you can create, where you do have balance, because that's what's distinctly missing from us right now in midfield, with the exception of that, you know, the Thiago, Bajcetic, Keita midfield. We don't have balanced midfields. And when you don't have balance in midfield and you don't have any ability to run in behind, you set yourself up for things like the last 30 minutes of this game. So I don't know if this flashed on the UK broadcast, but on the ESPN broadcast here in the States, one of the things that they did show was passes by players in the final third, and it was all Brighton players. And they had to clarify with the graphic that this isn't just, you know, passes into the final third by Brighton players. This is through all players in the match. So I think that tells you everything. I think, and so much of that came in the last 30 minutes that I think it tells you everything you need to know about how diabolical we were after those subs.
Yeah. And sadly, we'll do this quickly because we mentioned Matoma. It's a filthy, it's a shit goal from us. But I can't blame Joe Gomez for getting done by that Matoma touch. It's a phenomenal bit of skill.
It's gorgeous. Everything that happens after Matoma touches the ball, I kind of don't want to fault any of our players for. I think it's more that you have Joe Gomez and Darwin Nunez on the back post in a set piece, and Matoma's not a huge guy. That he's ending up with the ball when it's played in aerially at the back post. That's the problem. It's the first ball. The second ball there. Yeah, I mean, the problem is there is no second ball. It's the first ball's getting through, and you know, if you're getting beat by a ball at the back post in a set piece, that's bad. It's bad execution and it's bad coaching.
It is, but I don't even know what to name this podcast. No replay, yay. That's basically it. But no, I think we'll finish up there, because we've went over an hour, and there was positives in the context of our season so far being that bad. And we don't have to play Brighton anymore, which is the main positive. But we'll finish up there, Justin. Any pods planned from you?
Nothing coming anytime soon, because I think I think that the Liverpool podcasts at the moment are kind of just a bit of talk therapy. So I'll probably be on NKS at some point. Yeah, I'll probably be on NKS at some point down the rest of the season. I was hoping to maybe do another FA Cup pod with you, but we are out of said competition.
Yes. Yeah. Bomber. Well, at least it's less for me to do. But no, that is it from me and Justin. I don't know when I'll be back as a host. This is my one gig, ladies and gentlemen. It's gone away. But yes. Thank you, everyone, for listening. The Premier League will be back next week, and I will be away then, so I get a little break from Liverpool. Whoopee. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows. Sports Social Podcast Network.